His circle of life has landed him back at the Oregonian. You could follow on Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Another week, we're still standing. How's Team Fentress doing?
Doing good, man. Got my daughter out playing golf. She played a little tournament today. She's catching the bug, I think.
Like, I could put it, you know, when I was way, way young and running around and playing baseball and basketball and football and hockey and soccer and everything in the world, and I turned 14, my grandfather said, "You're not always going to be able to run around and play this stuff. Take up golf." He forced me to. Best decision I ever made. All right. So
That's what her grandfather was saying today. He was like, you know, it's not even a matter whether or not she becomes really good or not. It's that she's not going to be playing basketball when she plays basketball right now. She's not going to be playing that when she's 60. But, you know, she could be playing golf when she's 60. So just learn the skill now and have it already. Because once you learn to swing when you're young, you know, you learn things when you're young. They stick with you to a certain extent. So, but she's having fun.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So even though we knew what was coming, you know, from early Monday, the handwriting was on the wall. It went Big Ten, Pac-12, postponing all sports until calendar year 2021. But again, while it wasn't a surprise, just your thoughts on the reality of it hit you like, no college football, no Duck football this year. Even though we knew it was coming, it was still like, wow, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's in the back of my mind. I always, you know, held out hope. Probably early summer when things seemed like things were getting a lot better, I kind of had hope, and I kind of felt like, you know, if MLB had to get rolling first, and then the NBA, and then that would create hope for college football. But you know, there's so many other factors involved, especially with the amateurism of college football, that to get these guys out there and you know, not insist necessarily, insist that these guys play, because there's so much money at stake when they're not getting any of it other than, you know, their scholarships, obviously. That just creates a whole different issue. And people kept raising this, you know, the idea of, okay, well, what do you do if someone catches it and gets really sick? You know, they're going to sue, right?
Of course.
And, yeah, and I remember asking a parent back in, I think it was March or April, I asked him, I said, an Oregon parent, I said, would you sign a waiver absolving Oregon of any wrongdoing if your son caught COVID playing football? And he said, F no. Now, initially, I'll be honest with you, initially, I was a little surprised because I kind of thought that this parent, whose kid has NFL potential, might be thinking, you know, I want my kid to play. I think he'll be okay. You know, he's going to have a big season and get drafted higher than maybe he's going to right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But his point was like, we don't know enough about this to know what is all going on. I'm not going to sign anything to, because, you know, if you sign something like that, it makes it easier for the school to, you know, maybe not be as responsible as they should be, or force things through. I mean, imagine if the parents of every player in the Pac-12 signed a waiver. We won't sue you. Well, the college is going to be like, okay, let's roll, because yeah, it doesn't matter if these kids get it, they get sick or die, because the parents can't sue us, so screw it. It's a shocker. But you know what? Let's hope they play in the spring. I hear this nonsense, oh, they can't play in the spring because of XYZ. There's no reason. If COVID is under control, if there's a vaccine, they can play in the spring. You can make it an 8-game season. So some people say, oh, they'll play 2 years. They'll have to play 2 seasons in 1 year. Okay, so shorten both seasons. Make them both 8-game seasons or whatever to get a season in. Well, if the stars aren't going to play because they're going to go to the draft, you know what? You're right. They're not. If I'm Penasul, Holland, Pickett, Breeze, you know, even the seniors, I wouldn't play in the spring, let alone come back next year. I'm going pro now. You're right. They're not going to play. But the other guys are, and you can get a season in. So I think something could happen in the winter or spring, hopefully.
Well, not only that, but let's play the who's kidding who card. If this thing is under control and they could get back some of that revenue lost, you really don't think they're going to be all in for that? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, exactly. Even if it's a short season, like, just be creative like the NBA. Dude, the NBA right now is kicking ass. Like, you know, they're pulling it off. They're pulling it off. Like, I was just hoping nothing bad happens. But, you know, the games have been amazing. They've been exciting. And this is just the play-in seeding nonsense.
Right.
I mean, all the excitement really is around number 8. and number eight can get rolled by the Lakers, but it's been pretty exciting and intense. And when things get really going, I mean, when I watch the games, I don't know about you, I don't even notice that there aren't fans. They've done a good job of making it feel like there's some people there. So, you know, the NFL's got it down. Actually, the NBA's got it down right now. And I think they're showing the way for the rest of the world. And so if you're the NCAA, be creative. You don't have to play 12 games and then a bowl game or a conference championship game and then all these bowl games and the playoffs. Just, you know, you can make it an eight-game season. You can expand. This is what I would do. I would shorten the season, play every team in your conference once. Well, some conferences have to split it differently because they have more, a ton of teams. But play almost every team in your conference once, 8 to 10 games, whatever you want to figure out. No conference championships. The best record is the champion. And then expand the playoffs. See, that's where you can make up your money. Expand the playoffs.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Now, once TV gets involved with more games, that's your inventory.
Right. So now the team. So now you say, oh, we're only playing 8 or 9 games. Well, but the teams that go the furthest are going to play more. So you're going to have a handful of teams that are going to play 12 or 13, and you create this exciting playoff format. And then guess what? If you do that once in the spring, it's a hit, you're going to bring it back.
You know, I know you've been known to make a wager or two. So with the Big Ten and Pac-12 out, you buy this deal where the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 are holding off, and that there's any chance that there's going to be that level of college football this autumn?
You mean all those states with all those schools in red states?
Well, you know,
weren't following the social distancing and mask wearing guidelines,
right?
Because the president wasn't pushing in those states, right? And I'm not surprised they're going to try and play. Of course they are. You know, so yeah, they're going to try, and you know, we'll see how it goes. Because I still think if you get a bunch of kids sick and someone's here, okay, let's try the scenario: kid gets it, doesn't know he has it yet. Mom comes to see him play. Gives his mom a hug, boom, gives it to her. 6 weeks later, she's dead, right? She has underlying conditions. How are you going to recover from that?
Can't.
I don't care who you are. If you're Nick Saban, you go to the podium, what are you going to say? Well, you know, we took all the proper precautions. You better get that waiver signed, because if you didn't, that kid's going to sue the bejesus out of you. And so, you know, it's just, it's a recipe for disaster if they can't pull it off. And I just don't believe, okay, a conference with 12 teams in it, or the SEC has, isn't there 16?
14. Yeah, you know, like 14, the Big okay. Ten and the SEC and the ACC, I think they all have 14.
Right, okay, so one conference, 1,400 kids counting walk-ons. You're going to be able to control 1,400 kids and make sure they're all doing the right thing, and no one's going to bring it back and infect 20 people. And then how about coaches? You know, people keep talking about the players. They're young, they'll be fine. Well, not all the coaches are young and healthy. You know, anyone who follows college football knows that coaches at the college and NFL level lead mostly a pretty unhealthy lifestyle because of the work hours, the way they eat. I've done articles on this, especially in the NFL. So you have a lot of people that probably have underlying conditions. Someone's going to get, you know, a coach could get it and die. There's just all sorts of things that are possible that could go wrong. So God bless them if they want to start it. We'll see if they can finish it.
Yeah, I'll take that wager. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, says there's that old song about don't tug on Superman's cape. Over the weekend, you saw Patrick Beverley and Paul George kind of busting on Lillard, and he scores 122 in the next two games. I guess it's 112. But anyway, how about the show that guy put on back-to-back games?
Oh, man, dude. Do not irk him, right?
Right.
Do not give him a reason. And he's only missed one free throw since those two. I think he's 34, 35 or something from the free throw line since he missed those two big free throws against the Clippers. Yeah, you know what? The bottom line is, coming out of the Clippers game, I wrote something saying that basically they've made it tougher than it should be, you know. And actually after the Philly game. And it's because, you know, they exited that week and they should have been 2-0 given who those two teams played. And instead they lost one and then barely won the other one. And so, you know, at some point you just have to look at it and say, okay, well, what was this team really? So they beat Memphis in OT, and Memphis is going to be 3-5 in the bubble with one cheap win today over Milwaukee, didn't care. They beat Denver minus 56 points on the bench. They beat Philly minus their two best all-stars, right? So we had one quality win, and that was Houston. And so if you look at it then, it's like, okay, we all know there's no way Gary Trent can continue this, right? He's going to get cold. And sure enough, the last two games, he's 2 for 12 or whatever he is from 3-point range. So, and then we find out that CJ isn't right. So clearly, Dame had to put the team on his back and basically say, okay, no matter what, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose with me doing everything I can to score as many points as possible to make up for, you know, all our other deficiencies, especially on defense. And that's what he's done. And the last two performances have been remarkable. So, you know, he I don't know if he has to do that today against the Nets, but the Nets on paper don't look scary at all. But they're having a good run in the bubble, and they've got dudes. You know, they've got guys who, if they're wide open, they'll make the shot. And we all know the Portland leaves dudes wide open. So you might need, you know, Portland might need at least 40, 45 for Dame today. But, yeah, he's going nuts. And what's funny about Damian Lillard to me, you know, he screamed at the media in the bubble game, you know, put some respect on my bleeping name, you know, that kind of stuff. He's always playing the I'm slighted card. And I joked in the article I wrote about him that he must have watched The Last Dance this spring and learned from Michael Jordan how you turn any little
right.
remote slight into motivation to destroy other people, to give them 60. That's what he did to the poor, unsuspecting Mavericks.
Yeah, you know it's your night when you take a three-pointer, it goes up in the air, it disappears for a half hour, and comes back through.
Yeah, Carmelo Anthony said, yeah, I knew we were going to win one that
way. A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. You know, you heard Barkley. I heard you just allude to it. But this Lakers, even without Rondo, I know Avery Bradley opted out. Is it accurate to say, first of all, don't draw much conclusions about the Lakers because they had like one game it seems like they cared about? They really haven't had anything to play for.
Right. The one game that mattered was the first one against the Clippers because that locked up number one.
Right.
And they won that game. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the Clippers and Bucks are tied for the second best teams in the NBA, and then Boston might be fourth behind them. So they beat one of the best three teams in the league when it mattered. And then from then on, well, yeah, they haven't looked great. But then again, you know, it's like they had nothing to play for and a week and a half to kill. I find it amusing. All these people running around on TV talking about how the Blazers can beat them, how the Lakers don't want to see them. Right, I'm like, who are we talking about? Like, the Blazers were 31-37 coming into the bubble or something like that, and Nurkin Collins back. I think I may have said this on your show already, but Nurkin Collins, that's not the second coming of Mikael and Bird. This isn't Ewing and Mason or something like that. Like, this is a really good center and a growing power forward. These are not guys who all of a sudden make you the best team in the West, which is what you're saying if you're saying the Blazers are going to beat the Lakers. You're saying that the Blazers are going to go from ninth place, which is what they were, to one. And they're going to be the sixth team to ever be an eighth seed and beat the one seed. And they're going to do it against a team with one of the top three players of all time, whose running mate is the best big man in the league. That doesn't make any kind of sense. And your best two players you're going to do it with are two smallest guards who don't play really good defense. How is that a thing? Like I'm racking my brain in the history of the NBA to come up with any scenario close to that. And there isn't one. I think people are doing this strictly to try and create some drama, create some buzz for that game. I'm calling it conspiracy theory. But even on First Take the other day, they were talking about this. I'm like, what are you people talking about? Who's guarding LeBron? Like, if LeBron gets pissed off at any point in that game, who's guarding?
Cliff Robinson.
Carmelo?
Cliff Robinson.
Right. Carmelo, Trent. And here's the other thing, too. We all know if LeBron wants to shut down Lillard, Lillard's done. We've seen him do it against Derrick Rose in the playoffs. Rose is cruising along, and all of a sudden LeBron goes, you know what, I'm tired. It's locked him up for 4 minutes. He locked up George and Kawhi in that game in the bubble earlier in the whole bubble session. If you're in the fourth quarter and it's close, he's put LeBron on Lillard, and it's over. So, this to me, it's just nonsense. I'll say if Lillard has 5 50-point games, maybe they get one legit win and then get lucky another one. At worst, 4-2, but I think it's going to be 4-1 Lakers.
All right. Yeah, that's what one of my big Blazer fans says. I feel at least like they won't get killed in four straight. And I was like, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, that's reasonable. That's reasonable.
All right, so what you wrote today... about Damian Lillard being a one franchise Hall of Famer, and first you look at the facts, he's now 30, got the max deal last summer. You unpacked a lot, but how realistic is it that, you know, you get a couple years down the road? I mean, they're still on the heels of making the Final Four. It's exciting right now. Do you think if he sees the window closing to win a title or contend, he'd ask out, or is he maybe just built differently?
Well, you know, as I was writing this, there's a part I was writing, and I actually thought of you. I almost texted you about that. I'm going to be on a show in a couple days anyway. But I was trying to come up with superstar players that spent their entire career with one team and didn't win a title. And the only two I could come up with in the last 40 years were Reggie Miller and Stockton. Now, I kind of count Ewing in that, because he left at 37, 38. He was pretty much done. So, like, basically, he spent his entire prime of his career with one team. But other than that, I can't think of anybody. Is there anyone I'm missing?
I actually researched it, because once that thought's in my head, I'm now obsessed. So you also brought up ABA guys. So there's one guy who's in the Hall of Fame that played 9 years when they joined the NBA, Dan Issel with the Nuggets. So he played in the ABA and didn't. But, you know, 9 years, a little different. And Iceman, when he came over, he played his whole career with San Antonio, except his last year he was with the Bulls.
Mm.
So your answer is...
Ewing.
Right. Nobody's ever stayed their whole career and not won it, aside from Reggie and Stockton.
And then I put the list out there of players who left and won a title elsewhere, like LeBron for one, you know, Ray Allen, Garnett, you know, there's several others. And of course there's a long list of guys who did stay, but they won championships, Magic, Bird, and so on. So I sort of count Jordan, because the Wizard thing was whack. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. So the bottom line is, what Lillard would be doing would be extremely rare. And so my thing is, at the end of, when he gets to 34, 35, and he's making $50 million a year, if they aren't contenders, right, and he's eating up that much money to where you can't go out and get another dude to run with him to try and win it, at some point, it's best for everyone involved to just cut the cord. Because if you don't, you run the risk of playing out the last 3 years of his career, 36, 37, 38, where you're paying him a lot still. Even if he takes a discount, he's making 40, right? So your most expensive player is not that great anymore. You're going to be just good enough to flirt with the playoffs and maybe get in, which means you're not going to get high picks. And I ask you, who's this sound like? Kobe Bryant's last few years.
Sure.
Rest his soul, right? He wasn't the same guy. Like, when he came back from the Achilles, I mean, those years were not good. He was good enough, though, to keep them, you know, reasonable, so he didn't fall high in the lottery. So I just, you know, at some point you say, okay, Lillard, you got 2 good years left. We'll send you over here. They'll give us some young assets. We get rid of your contract. You get a couple shots at a title. And that's exactly what happened with Clyde Drexler, right?
Yep.
He went to Houston and won the title. So I think it's admirable that he's ride or die with the Blazers, and that's how he wants to go out. I just wonder what the mindset will be in 4 or 5 years on both the Blazers' end and Lillard's end.
Well, I'll tell you what. I read the article. I went to Basketball Reference. I went through the top 50 scorers of all time.
That's what I did. That's what I did.
That's exactly yep. it. I mean, most of them, you know, it's like, all right, him. And I did a checklist, so thanks for the rabbit hole, Fentress. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, so obviously we got a big one tonight. Enjoy it. On Twitter, follow along at Aaron J. Fentress. Hopefully when we're talking next week, just for selfish reasons, we'll be talking about Portland, L.A. So always appreciate the time, and have a good one, man.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.